Welcome to the Intro Biology Podcast. Today we'll be discussing work and ATP. Broadly, work is the transfer of energy from one object to another. And in biology, we'll talk about several different types of work that we see inside of cells. The first is chemical work, and this is the work that drives endergonic or non-spontaneous chemical reactions that require energy. An example of chemical work would be like building a polymer, forming new bonds between monomers to build a larger polymer. That's an example of chemical work because we're investing energy to form chemical bonds. Another type of work is transport work. This is the work of moving substances against their electrochemical gradient. For example, pumping ions into or out of the cell from regions of low concentration to high concentration, which is against their electrochemical gradient, that would require an input of energy. So we call that transport work. Another is mechanical work, and this is simply movement. Moving an object from one place to another requires an input of energy. This would be things like the beating cilia on the surfaces of the cells that line our respiratory system that move material through them, contracting muscles, which is proteins moving across filaments, and then the moving of chromosomes during cell division. All of that is moving objects, which requires an input of energy. In the cell, energy is not just freely available floating around all the time. Energy comes from the breaking of chemical bonds, usually in the foods that we eat and that cells have access to. But the energy that we need needs to be applied to certain situations and at certain times. In order to bridge that gap between the energy released by the chemical breakdown of material to the doing of chemical work, we need to do a process called energy coupling. Energy coupling uses the energy released by an exergonic reaction to drive an endergonic reaction. And one of the main ways that cells do energy coupling is with the molecule called ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. Essentially, the energy that's released by an exergonic reaction is stored in the molecule of ATP, and then eventually the energy stored in ATP is released to drive endergonic reactions. This molecule, adenosine triphosphate, is one of the bases of RNA. It contains an adenine nitrogenous base, a ribose sugar, that's what makes it RNA and not DNA, and three phosphate groups attached to it. Its functions are both to do energy coupling, to store energy that can be released later, and as a base for RNAs. What's interesting about this molecule is that the energy that's stored in this molecule is mainly stored in the stability of the products, not necessarily in the bonds themselves. Another way to think about this is potential energy. You'll remember from a previous episode that potential energy is energy that exists due to location or structure. Here we're talking about the structure of a molecule, ATP. Each of those phosphate groups contains negative charges. And ATP having three phosphate groups means you need to bring these three negative charges, three negatively charged groups, close to one another. Negative charges normally don't like to be around one another, right? Because like charges repel. So the act of bringing like charges together requires energy to hold together. Normally they want to be apart. If you're bringing them together, it requires energy to hold them together. When ATP is broken down or hydrolyzed, those negatively charged groups separate from one another. Separation of negative charges is more stable than holding those negative charges together. So to think about it that way, the energy of ATP is stored in the stability of allowing those negative charges to separate compared to when they're held together in the ATP molecule. When you hydrolyze ATP, you use water to separate or break the bond between the third phosphate group farthest from the ribose sugar and the second phosphate group, the next closest one to the ribose sugar. So the products of this reaction of hydrolyzing ATP are ADP, an adenosine attached to two phosphates, that one phosphate that was removed, and a release of energy. The hydrolysis of one mole of ATP releases about 7.3 kilocalories per mole, which, remember from our previous class, means that that's enough energy to raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water by 7 degrees in just one mole of ATP. Or conversely, you could write this as 30.5 kilojoules of energy released per mole of ATP hydrolysis. The energy that ATP releases when it's hydrolyzed is used to do many different processes inside the cell, such as the work we talked about. One is that it can actually just generate heat. Burning of ATP releases heat that can warm biological systems. This is part of when you shiver your muscles, you're burning ATP, releasing heat, and that's helping warm a body. And then also the work that we already talked about, chemical work, such as the energy needed to drive chemical reactions, transport work, moving things across their against their concentration gradients, and mechanical work, moving things around in location. One example of how ATP can drive chemical reactions and do chemical work is by making non-spontaneous reactions spontaneous. You remember that the delta G, or the free energy change of a reaction, is what we use to determine whether or not a reaction is spontaneous. So there are some chemical reactions that by themselves are non-spontaneous. They would have a positive delta G value. But if you couple that with the hydrolysis of ATP, such as transferring that phosphate group to a chemical that then participates in the chemical reaction, that can add to the reaction the negative delta G of ATP hydrolysis. And if that makes the overall reaction now have a negative delta G, you've changed the process from non-spontaneous to spontaneous. That's just one example of how ATP can be used in chemical work. It's also worth remembering that ATP, when it gets hydrolyzed, does not get lost forever. It actually gets recycled. When you hydrolyze ATP into ADP, a free phosphate group and some energy, that ADP can be rephosphorylated to generate ATP. And we call this the ATP cycle. Catabolic pathways that are exergonic and release energy, that energy is used to phosphorylate ADP, so to add a phosphate group back to ADP. Again, thinking back to our charges, if you're trying to add a negatively charged phosphate group to an already negatively charged ADP molecule, that's not favorable to bring like charges together, so you have to invest energy. So the phosphorylation of ADP is endergonic. So we're using the exergonic energy release of a catabolic pathway to couple to the endergonic reaction of phosphorylating ADP. Then conversely, when you hydrolyze ATP, you release energy. That's an exergonic reaction. And that release of energy can drive anabolic pathways that are endergonic. The amount of ATP that's used in a cell at any given time is quite staggering. Every second in every cell, about 10 million molecules of ATP are consumed and regenerated in this ATP cycle, showing you just how important this molecule is to the proper functioning of a cell. Just to summarize what we discussed in this episode, the hydrolysis of ATP is an exergonic reaction that releases energy. That release of energy is used by other biological processes such as heat and also chemical, transport, and mechanical work. Chemical, such as the driving of chemical reactions, transport, the moving of material against its electrochemical gradient, or mechanical, moving things around the cell in location. ATP, once it's hydrolyzed to ADP, can be rephosphorylated to ADP with an investment of energy, and that recycling is called the ATP cycle.